Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake, the show where we go deep, we get weird, and we search for the meaning of life along the way. Presented by Cass Media and Soul Pancake.
Hello, Metaphysical Milkshake listeners and viewers. It is I, Rainn Wilson.
And I am Reza Aslan.
Reza, I was listening to an episode of our podcast the other day, and I just...
Listen to our podcast?
Yeah, I do. I do. I listen back to them, and I just want to say that your audio is always so, just so clean and crisp.
Oh, that's nice of you to say. Thank you. Well, you know, I'll tell you the key. So what I want to do is I make sure that the microphone is exactly 6 inches from my mouth, and then you have to always make sure to practice your breath work.
Okay, like, okay. Really whoa. Hey, Reza, don't mansplain to me, okay? I was just playing, I was paying you a compliment, man. I don't need some step-by-step instructions, how-to guide, chauvinist pig.
Hey. Whoa, what's going on here? What are you doing, man?
Yeah, well, you know what? I set a trap and you fell right into it, you big heaping mass of toxic testosterone.
All right. Okay, listen, I was just trying to give you some advice about how
you
to
see,
sound better.
You see, we as men have this peculiar tendency to interrupt, to pontificate, to explain, to lecture, to sermonize, just like Mr. Frat Boy right here.
What? Frat Boy, please. This is a bit of an overreaction. I think you need to bring
but
it down.
What men have a hard time doing is listening, really listening and learning, especially from the better sex, women.
Okay, well, as usual, this whole like bizarre and convoluted way that you've brought this up actually brings up a very important point, which is that often, as you and I are very familiar with this, women are just, you know, smarter than men.
Preach, sister.
Yeah. Let's look at the pandemic, right? Look at the countries that were run by women. New Zealand, Germany, Taiwan, Finland. These were all female-led states, and all of them saw fewer deaths than male-led states.
Yeah, you go, girl.
This, I think, raises a very fascinating question, a question that we want to discuss on the show today, which is, what can men learn from women?
Yes, queen.
No. Now, I don't think you're allowed to say that. That's not, pretty sure that's
okay.
That's offensive.
I'm trying to be supportive.
What can men learn from women?
Yeah. Why is it so hard for men to learn from women? Why?
Well, see, here's the thing. This is kind of unfair because both you and I are married to very successful women.
Yes.
My wife, Jessica Jackley, is like, you know, world-renowned social entrepreneur. I basically like use my wife as the model for how to function in the world.
You totally rode her coattails, by the way.
I totally rode her coattails. I mean, like, obviously she's my model for how to be a parent because I was raised by wolves, so I don't really understand.
Literal like wolves? Like Persian wolves?
Like Persian wolves. Sometimes, you know, on like full moons, I get a little bit itchy. Like my parents, we were immigrants to the country. Like, basically, my parents' entire philosophy about parenting was, are you alive at the end of the day? Well, then I did my job. But like, you know, Jessica's like this incredible mom. She's got so much empathy. Like, she listens, which is weird. she like takes their problems seriously. Like to me, a 6-year-old's problem isn't a real problem. So yes, she's my model for how to be a parent, but I'll be perfectly honest with you. She's like my model for how to function in the world, like how to talk to people.
My wife, Holiday Reinhorn, is my model for how to be a human being in the world. Because I feel the same way. I was raised by, not by wolves, by aliens. And I honestly have, and I talked about this in my book, that I would watch kids like in the lunchroom and how they interacted. And someone would be like, hey, bro, how's it going? And pat the other person on the shoulder and be like, oh, that's how normal teenage boys interact. So then I would go up to someone and be like, hey, bro, how's it going? And I would model and I would pat them on the shoulder. But honestly, like my wife Holiday, like she really helps run our nonprofit. She helps raise our son. She's a Tai Chi master and she's deeply spiritual. Her prayer and meditation practice, her kind of therapy practice. Like she lives her life so deeply and with such thoughtfulness and kindness to everyone. Like, you know, I find myself asking my advice of her, you know, 10 times a day.
So obviously in our lives, we have learned this lesson in a very sort of deep and emotional way about like how to basically be more like a woman, how to be more like, you know, the women that we have married. But I wonder, like, what about in a global sense? You know, like what can the world's men learn from my wife? I mean, women in general.
So good thing we have a brilliant woman here to teach us, to guide us, to show us the way into the huddle. We have the incredible Brooke Baldwin to unpack this very perplexing question.
She's an American journalist. She's an author. She was the anchor of CNN Newsroom with Brooke Baldwin for, I don't know, like 30 years, maybe something like that.
Her documentary, To Catch a Serial Killer, won a Silver World Medal for Best Investigative Report in 2012.
Wait. Did they catch the serial killer?
They made a documentary about it. It's promised in the documentary.
I bet you if they had caught the serial killer, she would have gotten the gold award, not the silver.
Yeah, award. But then they should have titled it To Try to Catch a Serial Killer.
And of course, she's the author of a brand new book called Huddle, How Women Unlock Their Collective Power. Brooke Baldwin.
What's up?
Hi. Look at you. You look so sunned and rested and
vacation hair. Goodness. Don't care.
Is this what happens when you leave cable news?
This is what happens. You just move to a small beachy island in the Caribbean forever and ever. Amen.
Wow. Leaving CNN really agrees with you.
I gained 20 pounds when I left CNN. So I just well, not work. It did
you
not
left
work for me.
Under very different circumstances,
all right,
that's
Reza. Fine. Yes,
you were that's shit true. Canned.
The book is called Huddle.
Nice segue.
We're really excited to talk to you about this book. I greatly enjoyed it.
Thank you, Rain.
There's a lot of really interesting ideas packed into this. But I want to start with the title. So such an important word drives the entirety of the book and the conversation in and around the book. What does huddling mean? How did you arrive at that word? And what are all the resonances of that word huddle? It's fantastic.
Thank you. I was hoping it'd be a sticky word, you know, and it's a word I chose with intention. You think of huddle, I think of a bunch of guys on a football field, right? And we know that men have been huddling, you know, in terms of sports or socially for years and years and years, as have women, but we just haven't had a word for it. And I was like, why don't we take this super masculine seeming laced word, flip it on its head, feminize it, legitimize it, name it, and own it as women. Like it's a noun, it's a verb. And how I'm roughly defining huddle is, you know, a place where women are energized by just the fact of their coexistence, right? It can be where women come together to pray, to protest, or to sweat. It's like the moms, you know, whose backs you're looking out for, or the coworkers who you know you want to succeed. Like their success is your success, and I just think like collectives of women get amazing shit done, and I wanted to write a book about it.
See, I like the fact that you were like, I need to figure out a kind of a sticky word, a sticky idea. Because I feel like that's so much a part of, you know, a lot of these books that have come out, very successful books that are talking about, you know, new ways of thinking about feminism or how women should act in a certain way. There's like Lean In, Boss Lady. And this to me, it's almost like Lean On, instead of lean in.
Exactly.
That's how I think about it. Trademark. I'm going to write that down. Hold on.
I think I might have written that in the book. So I had it first.
I totally understand how important that is. But like, what is it that separates this concept from some of these other ones that I was mentioning that I've also tried to kind of create new frameworks for women to think about themselves as individuals and as collectives?
Sure. I think the biggest difference is you're bringing intention to huddling, and the shared goal is building an entirely new table for women. Like, we all love and of course admired Shirley Chisholm and her quote about, like, if you don't have a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. And so this is the notion from all these various huddles of women. I talked to everyone from Reese Witherspoon's, you know, production company in Santa Monica, Hello Sunshine, to Stacey Abrams and her huddles of women who helped them, you know, flip Georgia blue, to, you know, certain members of Congress, to women athletes. Like, they're all successful. They're not because they're these, you know, lone successors or outliers. It's because they are huddlers, because they know how to unlock their collective power.
So really the key difference here is it's about working together as a group so that everyone can benefit from it, right? Like, having each other's backs and like supporting each other. Because so many of these other books I've noticed are all about like, you go, girl, you can do it by yourself and go out there and show them who's boss and lean in. And you're like, well, maybe we need a little support system here.
We need a total support system. And I think some of that stuff, like girl boss and pink wave, and it feels pejorative. It feels, you know, I love Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In. And that had a role at that time. But I think that like the tide has turned. And I think even just from my own experience, like I felt like there was this tidal wave between the Trump, you know, Trump election and the Women's March and Me Too and Time's Up and all the women running for election in 2018, you know, at every single national, state and local levels. It just felt like this giant surge with women, and they were doing it in a collective way. And I thought that was interesting. Like, I've been a journalist for 20 years, but I've never noticed women coming together to succeed, to achieve that one thing. And it also was like, you know, I mean, I'm down for a good like wine night with the girls, but that's just sort of, that could be haphazard and you're just kind of hanging out, or a happy hour. And this is different. This, again, is like having the intention. What are we going to achieve? Why are we coming together? What's the goal?
Well, we're discussing today, what can men learn from women? And we'll get more to that as the discussion progresses. But
yeah,
what I'm also hearing, and Reza, I think you brought this up in a really great way, is when you're talking about huddling, you're talking about this collective energy and this collaboration, consultation, you know, all the CO words, as opposed to some kind of girl boss bitch kind of thing, which is like women co-opting kind of a more masculine stance in the workplace. This is saying, I don't want to mansplain it, but the book seems to be saying kind of like, hey, one of our powers is collectivism and
totally
consulting and supporting. And this is what women specifically have been doing for, you know, past 100,000 years. So is this, I don't want to give anything away, is this one of the things that men can take from women, is a more collective action that is proactively nurturing?
Yes, I think for so long, like, women have tried so hard to, obviously we want to be successful, we want to rise up in the workplace, or, you know, kick ass on the soccer field or what have you. And a lot of times, like, we try, well, we're like, well, the men are paid more and are in most of those higher positions. And so thus we need to like emulate how men walk through the world. But, you know, like, if I may, fuck that, you know, like, why can't we just show up as we are, show up vulnerably, ask for help, something that women don't really often like to do because we don't want to be a burden on one another. We inherently have this sisterhood. I mean, I talked to this Black historian, Kimberly Springer, who was like, Brooke, Black women specifically, and that's why I wanted to start my huddle journey in Houston with those Black women judges. Black women have been huddling in this country, you know, you go back to slavery, right? So like four centuries where, you know, their husbands or their partners would be on the auction block and would be sold. And at the end of the day, it'd be the women who would have each other's backs. Like they huddled out of necessity. But a lot of black women specifically told me, you know, but it predates slavery in the way that black women have genuinely enjoyed one another's company. And then of course you look at like the womanist movement and the Million Woman March, you go into the 80s and the 90s and it's just like never stopped versus like white women. And I talked to Kristen Goss, this Duke professor, was like, there was a bit of a huddled drought in the 80s, 90s and 2000s with white women, which PS is like essentially my lifetime. And so I knew I wasn't totally nuts when I noticed, having covered the 2016 presidential election and noticing a lot of women showing up for one another, left, right, and center, that something was happening in America that I hadn't seen in a long time. But I think, Rain, to ultimately answer your question, I think we just need to be together and we need to show up as ourselves together and not try to act like anything else.
The Black judicial candidates story that you were talking about, as you write about the, I guess it was 19 black judicial candidates in Harris County, Texas, and they all decided, what if we all run together, you know, as a group, like instead of, you know, picking on each other. And I guess 17 out of the 19 won, is that right?
They all won in this very red district. And imagine, you know, I sat with six of them over brunch in Houston one weekend for hours. And they were like, and they're each of them, you know, has an extraordinary number of years as a lawyer, you know, prosecuting cases. And they would say to me, Brooke, like, think of the number of times we would even go in front of a black judge. Like they were like, we could count on one hand. And the idea of going in front of a black woman judge, you know, was one woman held up her pinky. Like that's how rare it is. And the fact that they all had won their primaries and they all show up in this smallish room and they don't know they're all running. And they start looking around and they start counting faces. 19 black women were in this room and they all were like, you know what? I'm putting the word in their mouth. We're going to huddle. We're going to campaign together. And even the Democratic Party, they said, we don't like that idea. Like, we don't like a whole group of black women, you know, rolling around Harris County together, you know, campaigning. And they didn't listen. And they won, and they are still huddling from the bench. Like, you know, I stay in touch with a lot of them, and they're still like in the middle of a trial. It's like a childcare or a custody situation. And one of the judges will have a question, and she'll literally hit pause on the trial, will go down to her cell phone. She's got, they call themselves Black Girl Magic. So she'd like text the Black Girl Magic, you know, text chain. And is like puts out an SOS and is not afraid to ask about, you know, a penal code or what have you. And so, you know, they're hoping as black women, as black mothers, can you imagine, you know, trying to change the face of the justice system in Harris County, Texas?
The Black Women Magic text chain, Reza, we will never be a part of that. We have to just let that go.
This episode is brought to you by Four Sigmatic, a wellness company that is well known for its delicious mushroom coffee. And you're thinking to yourself, I'm sorry, did you say mushroom coffee, Reza? Yeah, I said mushroom coffee, and it is incredible. It's real organic, fair trade, single origin, Arabica coffee with lion's mane mushroom for productivity and chaga mushroom for immune support. It's like the coffee that you normally drink, but more delicious, and it works better. And I know, because I have been starting my day with Four Sigmatic's ground mushroom coffee.
This was so extra delicious and smooth. And believe me, it does not taste like mushrooms.
No.
You're not going to taste any mushrooms. It just kind of like takes away that acidic aftertaste,
yeah,
kind of balances it out.
And all Four Sigmatic products are organic, vegan, gluten-free. Plus, every single batch is third-party lab-tested to ensure its purity and safety. So you know, you're getting the highest quality coffee and mushrooms.
We have worked out an exclusive offer with Four Sigmatic on their best-selling mushroom coffee, but this is just for Metaphysical Milkshake listeners. Get up to 40% off plus free shipping on mushroom coffee bundles. Now, to claim this deal, you must go to foursigmatic.com/milkshake. This offer is only for Metaphysical Milkshake listeners and is not available on their regular website. You'll save up to 40% and get free shipping. So right now, go to foursigmatic.com, which is foursigmatic.com/milkshake, and fuel your productivity and creativity with some delicious mushroom coffee. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. I just want to say that therapy has been incredibly helpful to me throughout my life, the past 20 years off and on, that I have been engaging in therapy, spending 50 minutes a week looking at my own personal patterns of behavior that might be setting me back. And at BetterHelp, you can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas.
I've known Rain a long time, and he is much more likable since therapy. So BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. So visit their website. Read their testimonials. They're posted daily on the site. You can go to betterhelp.com/milkshake. That's better H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're now recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. And there's a special offer. Just for our Metaphysical Milkshake listeners, you can get 10% off your entire first month at betterhelp.com/milkshake. Take care of yourself, people. Take care of yourself. We love you.
Since we have one of the world's top journalists and incredibly accomplished and a powerful, dynamic woman, let's shift a little bit and say, how do we fix the media? Since we're here, might as well just have a little bit. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think we need to be covering, like, telling stories. Like, I think it should be across the board as much as we can, understanding, number one, what's happened with Americans as a result of politics and this, like, crevasse between the left and the right, and how, you know, of course, Biden kept talking about the word unify, but I have a lot of friends, let's say, on the left who were like, I don't want to unify with the right. And how do we tell that story, right? We need to send correspondents all throughout America. And I think CNN does do this. And we have, I mean, Sarah Seidner is one of my favorites. And I mean, she's a Black woman who goes in to try to understand, like, what's happening within white supremacy. And we need to be telling those stories in addition to, you know, as we have in the wake of the Derek Chauvin trial and what's happening with the racial reckoning in America, to, you know, stories that I think are undercovered, you know, within. I loved how the WNBA dedicated their season last season to Breonna Taylor and the Say Her Name campaign. And I wanted them to get more attention. And as the WNBA season gets ready for the next season, like, why aren't we talking about them more? Why aren't we talking about, like, huddles don't often make the headlines. It's not always, like, the sexy story. It's not the clickbait. It's not the argument on TV. But I would balance it out a little bit more.
No, but I mean, look, I think part of this issue, and this is the perfect segue to our larger question, which is, you know, what can men learn from women? I would say there's a lot, in my view, that is wrong with cable news. But I think one of the biggest issues, and this is why I'm so curious about, like, how would the news be different if women ran it instead of men? One of the biggest issues to me is that so much of cable news is predicated on telling the story from the perspective of the people in power. Like, I got fired solely because there was this fear that somehow my words would impede upon CNN's access to Donald Trump, right? Like, what if we can't interview him? What if we can't get access to power?
Was that what was explained to you?
Yes, in certain terms. Like, he won't come on any of our shows. By the way, was not coming on anyone's show. You were talking about, you know, the Black Lives Matter, the police riot matters, you know, this idea of looking at it from the perspective of the police or the government or the people in charge instead of the people being affected. And I feel like, you know, if there's anything that the data that we have access to says about women, is that women are by far more empathetic. They are more cooperative. Their leadership tends to be more transformational instead of more transactional. You know, they're better multitaskers. I mean, there's, like, all these, you know, sort of surveys that show that women in leadership positions bring certain aspects to those positions that are, I think, to me at least, necessarily going to be on the side of the downtrodden and the oppressed, and less so on the oppressor and the people in power.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
This goes alongside with something that you mentioned earlier when I was like, how do we fix the news media? And you were like, more stories about huddles. But I like, Reza, what you're saying, because we do see, to me, the news just kind of reflects the system as it is and perpetuates it by saying, hey, here's the men in power and what they think. Let's put them on this pedestal and get, you know, and see the news from their perspective.
Like, I can't crawl into the head and heart of a male news executive, right? All I can know is what it feels like when I'm sitting at that desk live every day for 2 hours and the kinds of people I want to talk to. And this is just my lived experience as a woman. And I want to talk to well-known people. I want to talk to ordinary, extraordinary people who, like, to understand how why people are doing the things that they're doing, why they tick. And it doesn't have to be a person in power at all. And I would want to, as I said before, I would want to, you know, as we have, like, talk to people in Minneapolis, you know, in the thick of the racial reckoning. I think you also, though, have to have access to the police. You have to cover it in a holistic way. But I wonder, that's actually really interesting, your perspective, that you feel like men in charge then only want to have the men in power. And, you know, listen, I agree that I think we should cover... I think we have to cover the people in power, but we also have to cover the regular folks in extraordinary circumstances. And I wish we did that more. And that is what I loved doing. And there has been a focus these last few years to those people in power, but understandably those people in power pull the strings and create, you know, sign laws and the rest of it. And so it's like, you have to have both, but it should be balanced. And so I think having women in charge and men would help balance it out instead of it being like this.
Shifting gears a little bit, my friend Justin Baldoni wrote this book called Man Enough. And it's essentially about toxic masculinity, but I was talking to him about the book and he was saying he can't really use the phrase toxic masculinity because so many men hear that and it just immediately shut down, have a knee-jerk negative reaction, get defensive immediately. So if we're talking about what men can learn from women, and the concept of huddling is so beautiful and powerful at the same time, how do we get this across to kind of white male mid-America, which in my mind, and deepest apologies, listener, I'm going totally against the Joe Roganification of America, but they're part of the problem, not the solution. You know, from anything from gun control to Black Lives Matter to the environment to even wearing masks in public being an impediment on their freedom. So many white men, 30s through 60s, let's say, seem to be holding things back and could so greatly benefit from huddling and kind of maybe taking on some of the more positive characteristics of the feminine. And I don't want to sound like a granola, crunchy, hippy-dippy 1972, like...
Go home, commie.
Like wimpy male, kind of. But at the same time, like, I feel like we could be stronger the more feminine we are. Or should we even be worrying about that and their reaction to this conversation? You know, a lot of people who deal in racial justice issues said, listen, we tried for decades to walk on eggshells and not step on any toes of white men. And we're talking about these issues. And guess what? Nothing changed. Nothing got better. So now we don't give a fuck about that. We're going to step on toes and we're going to break eggshells in having these discussions.
I mean, just as we were talking earlier about, like, why should women have to act like men to be successful? Mm-hmm. Why should men have to feminize for whatever reason? I'm just a big believer in showing up as whoever the fuck you are. Like, if you are rougher, be rough. If you are softer, be soft. But I don't think it's like, you shouldn't be a fraud. You shouldn't act like how you think you should for whatever reason to be the woo-woo granola or to be the tough chick in the office or to have sex like a man, or whatever it may be. To me, when I think of men and helping like support the huddle, I think of men in the workplace who have positions of power, who are hiring other women, who are adding, you know, childcare practices for not only women, but like promoting paternity leave and like telling men, take the time off, like go help your partner raise the kid. You know, I was talking to Abby Wambach for IG Live recently. Like, she's the badass soccer star. And she was telling me this story of, you know, I'm sure she's paid well, and she should be as a keynote speaker. And she was like up for some giant keynote speaker gig. And she was up against this other guy, and the CEO of this company, male, she didn't tell me the name of the company, but she said, ultimately she got the keynote job. And the CEO of the company who picked Abby called her up afterwards and was like, hey, I'm going to tell you that the guy you were up against, who we almost chose, was asking for 3 times the amount of money you are asking for. And like, you need to know that, and you need to be asking for more money for yourself. And like, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, having men share salary information or like sweeteners and contracts. Hey, like, I got this thing, this exists. Like, women are like, amazing, I got a contract and I'm only getting paid this, but like, I'm so grateful. Like, that needs to change. And we need guys to say, this is what I'm making, or this is what this guy was making, you know, like embolden us to ask for more. That's how you can help the huddle.
Look, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, both Rain and I, we talked about this earlier, absolutely rely on our wives to like—
Yeah, and I was gonna fire Reza and replace him with a woman and pay her twice as much, but—
Twice as much, that would mean 2 buckets of chicken a week.
Wow.
Folks, your online checking account shouldn't cost you money. That's why Chime, an award-winning app and debit card, has, listen to me here, no overdraft fees, no foreign transaction fees, no monthly service fees, and no transfer fees.
Folks, do we realize how many fees we're paying with credit cards and with debit cards? It is constant. You withdraw money, you get fees. You charge, you get fees. There's percentage run up every month.
And I know you're probably sitting there thinking to yourself, yeah, but like, you know, I need to use ATMs wherever I can find them. Well, guess what? Chime has over 60,000 fee-free in-network ATMs at locations like Walgreens or 7-Eleven or CVS, lots of places. That's more than the top 3 national banks combined. You can also send money to anyone, even if they aren't on Chime. No fees for you or cash out fees for them.
So it's time to say goodbye to hidden fees. Join the millions of Americans already loving Chime. Sign up only takes 2 minutes and it doesn't affect your credit score. You ready to change things? It's only going to take you 2 minutes. Get started today. Go to chime.com/milkshake. That's chime.com/milkshake.
Okay, this is the part where we do the really fast talking at the end.
Yeah, you try it. Go for it.
Here we go. Banking services provided by and debit card issued by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal fees apply except at MoneyPass ATM and a 7-Eleven location and at any Allpoint or Visa Plus Alliance ATM. Other fees such as third-party and cash deposit fees may apply. Boom!
Well done. Thanks, Chime, for sponsoring our podcast.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I still think we're missing something here. I mean, to say that men can best support women by sharing contract information and make sure they're hiring them, you know, I still want to go back to this Joe Roganification of America. Like, the concept, Brooke, of huddling to men is weakness. Men who huddle are weak. Women who huddle are strong. That's the whole thesis of your book. I'm sorry for some mansplaining, but we have a shit ton to learn from women. That's it. We have a shit ton. Reza and I were talking about what we have to learn and what we have learned from our wives. You know, this whole idea of like how men lead, individualistic, you know, emotionless, showing emotion or vulnerability is weakness. The alpha male, that whole idea of like,
of interrupting and
yes.
and mansplaining and knowing best. And if you show doubt or consult with people, that's weakness. So I think that there's foundationally, we could all go back to 1972 and munch on some granola, and men need to kind of like, we need to wimpify a little bit.
But can I push back on you just a little bit in saying that you don't think that for years men have looked out for their buddies and they've had a position to open and they'll grab this guy over this person, like how men have huddled and have, you know, there has been this favoritism among like circles of men and, oh, let's go out and like,
absolutely.
You know, crunch some numbers and do whatever on a golf course. Like we come back, we exclude the women and therefore like, the men are still running the show and caring about themselves. Like I would argue that there has been a little bit of that.
You're absolutely right. No question. But when I read your book, I see the definition of huddle a little bit differently, you know, and it's all throughout your book. It's not just, hey, let's help each other out and help
no,
us.
No, totally, totally.
It's also
right.
about let's support each other. Let's put our arms around each other. Let's share yeah. with each other. Let's, you know, consult and say, hey, I'm struggling with this. What are you struggling with this? Let's work together toward this end. So, you know, did they have men huddled up to the exclusion of women for centuries and you know, had this huddle and excluded women? No question.
Yes, 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 yes. yes.
But what we're talking about, the theme here is what can men learn from women? And, you know, I think men can learn those other aspects of huddling, not just with each other, but with all of humanity.
No, it's 29-year-old Stacey Abrams, when she was the deputy city attorney in Atlanta, the first access of power she had, she acted as a sponsor. She was surrounded by a bunch of really intelligent but low-level secretaries who had this extraordinary legislative knowledge of Georgia. She needed them. They deserve more money. She had her first taste of power. She goes to the city of Atlanta and she's like, hey, let's help them get a bit more education, thus like raising their salary caps. It's a win-win situation. It's Ava DuVernay, Black, successful woman filmmaker in, you know, Hollywood, who is amplifying other younger women, women of color, in order to direct Queen Sugar, thus creating this pipeline of more women in a very white male dominated space, you know, to be able to then go on to direct network television. It's, you know, women, Shannon Watts and Congresswoman Lucy McBath, creating the largest grassroots huddle in America, being Moms Demand Action, 6 million strong. And yes, it's men included in that number as well, but it's how they were able to come together and now change laws and create, you know, as they would say, gun sense legislation. It's how women hockey players and soccer players and, you know, basketball players have come together to fight for you know, equal rights. It's how they've all managed to, you're right. Drain, I'm just coming back to, yes, it is. That is huddling.
Yeah.
That is how you achieve amazing shit. And that is the special sauce with women in the collective.
Maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but it sounds like that the fundamental difference, at least in my experience of men huddling, is that, yes, it's true. Like we're always like, you know, trying to help each other out. But there's always a kind of, this would be better for me. Feel to it. Like, yeah, dude, I'll totally get you the job because it'll be fun to hang out. Yeah, dude, I'll totally write the recommendation because it somehow always comes back to me.
Self-serving.
Yes. But the huddling that you're talking about, Stacey Abrams, Ava DuVernay, it doesn't really have anything to do with them.
It's for the greater good.
Yeah. It's just for the betterment of the group. So maybe that's really what it is. You know, I mean, I know there's a lot of different ways that we can talk about how men can learn from women and how, you know, men need to learn to lead more like women. It's that this conception that it doesn't have to be transactional.
Mm-hmm.
The huddling doesn't have to be transactional.
Yeah.
What
exactly.
can I give you that I get? And that there's this sort of notion of, you know, what's good for you is good for everyone. That's really, I think, missing, I have to say, in my experience. And I've had a lot of benefit from other guys, you know?
That's so interesting.
So on that note then.
You nailed it, by the way. Both of you get it.
I think that was so well said.
Well yeah. done, thank gentlemen.
You. No, you connected the dots really well there, Reza. I'll give you some props. I'm not going to fire you. But
may I have more chicken, please?
You can have another pot of chicken. Yes. But I love that idea because all those, that list of amazing huddles, Brooke, that you just talked about, like they all had a cause. They had a goal. They strove for something to make the world a better place. It wasn't about like, yes, it was certainly about pay equity, but it wasn't about like, how can I get more out of this situation?
Let's bring it to a close here, which is, you mentioned a couple of things, very specific things that men can do to help support women. Tell us, like, how do woke guys like me and Rain, how do we,
so woke.
How can we be ally? I'm like barely woke, by the way. I've got a little baby, so I'm like half woke. How can we be better allies to women? I mean, there, I guess that was it. Yeah. Is there a more complicated way for me to ask that question?
Yeah, no, that's it. That's spot on.
I was like, how else could I say that? But that's it. How can I be a better ally?
No, thank you for asking the question. And thank you for being, you know, two woke dudes talking to a lady about huddling on this podcast. I mean, I think in addition to all the things I mentioned before, it's really simple. It's just like, men should support women huddling, should support women coming together, should not see it as something threatening or taking away from them. And it's also not something pejorative. It matters. And for me in my own, you know, later in life, learning to huddle and activating a huddle and nurturing a huddle and hopefully inspiring other women to huddle, it's made me just a better human, you know, in learning to huddle with other women. It's made me a better, you know, partner to my husband. It's made me a better journalist. It's just made me a more awake, vulnerable, communicative, caring human. And I think as long as men just see that and want that for other women, that's a win. Full stop.
Well, Brooke Baldwin, what an amazing discussion, and we got so much out of it. I am so ready to huddle. Reza, will you huddle with me?
I'll huddle with you anytime.
Excellent. So what we do with all our guests, and I'm excited to hear what you have to say, is a lightning round. Ready? Lightning round. Brooke Baldwin, when do you feel most connected with the universe?
Right when I wake up in the morning, early.
If you were stranded on a deserted island, and I don't mean like the resort island that you're currently stranded on, name three items that you would bring with you.
I would bring my journal. I would bring my Bob Marley box set. And that's just assuming I could play it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm still talking box set like I'm in the 90s.
all my cassettes.
And a bottle of Dom.
Hmm. So not your husband. Interesting. Okay.
Oh, good to know. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
What emotion do you wish you could better control?
Ooh, patience.
If you could trade places with any man in the world, who would it be and why?
You know, I would love to know what it feels to walk in the shoes of my good friend and commander in the Navy, Bobby Rashad Jones. We are both from Atlanta. He is black. I am white. He grew up in a very different existence as me. And we have had many very tough conversations in the last few years about how he walks through the world versus me. And I would want to know, I would want to just start to, I can barely understand that as a privileged white woman. And I would want to know what it feels like to be him.
Yeah, great answer. What's one eye-opening experience every person should have? Covering the water skiing squirrel?
Like really great sex. Like really, really, really great sex.
I'll tell you all about it later, Rain. what is something hardly anyone knows about you?
Describe your soul in 10 words or less.
Kind, adventurous, authentic, funny, wholehearted, curious.
If you had 5 minutes with Tucker Carlson in a dark shed and no one was the wiser, how would you spend those 5 minutes? Also, in this scenario, you have a baseball bat.
I would start with his childhood. I would want to understand where he comes from, how he was raised. Why are you laughing?
Because it's like the perfect answer to what men can learn from women.
Yep.
We
framed this whole discussion with that one question. She's leaning back and trying to understand him more deeply.
Like, what happened to you?
Tucker. Yeah, that's what I would want to understand. Just like, how did it all start?
Name something that a lot of people like, but you just can't stand.
Eggplant.
If you could have lunch with any author, past or present, who would it be?
Brené Brown.
And if Hollywood was making a biopic about your life, who would play you?
Kate Winslet.
That's a good one. Yeah. Okay. We'll see what we can do about that.
Yeah.
Finally, what is your life's big question?
What is my purpose for the greater good?
Brooke Baldwin, I've been a fan of yours for a very long time. The book is called Huddle. Get your hands on it, people. Men, women, everyone can learn from this. Look at all that rain learned from it.
I learned so much.
You guys are so great. So great. Do I get the bucket of chicken now? Or is this just...
That's how I survive, is that bucket of chicken. Don't take that away from me.
So Reza, I meant it. I want to huddle with you. You ready to huddle with me?
That's not a sexual thing, right? You mean just
that, like, you huddle. See,
I manned it, didn't I? I did a man just, thing. Yeah, I took an emotional moment and then I immediately
you Joe Roganified it. So how can we huddle more? How can we help each other more? Let's huddle up right now. You're working on a new book. You've got a couple of shows going. You're producing. What About Al? Whatever that sitcom's called. How can I huddle up and help you?
All right. I'm going to be honest and a little bit vulnerable
here.
But get me on fucking Star Trek. Somehow. Like, any way. I don't care how. Like, I'll die in the first few seconds of the show.
Just you'll be a red shirt? Fucking, yeah.
Whatever it takes.
Would you play would you play a dead body?
I would play a dead body. I will play an alien. I will I'll just do the voice of a robot. I'll be like the voice of an alien species.
Let me hear your alien voice right now. Let me just hear what that would sound like.
I am an alien.
Oh, no. I can help you. Listen, you have 17 kids. You want me to do some babysitting?
Fine. That's the only thing I wanted, but that's fine. Okay, all right. How can I help you then, Rain? How can I huddle with you? With no benefit to me whatsoever. Put me on Star Trek.
Well, I'm writing a new book. You're a way better writer than I am. Will you write it for me? Will you ghostwrite my book?
Oh, shit. How much chicken is there in it for me?
10,000 chicken.
We're in.
Look at that. We're going to help each other.
Lifetime supply of chicken. That way I made it transactional because I'm a man. But I learned something from Brooke Baldwin, which is, doesn't have to be for my benefit.
That's
just
right.
For the benefit of all humanity. I will help you with your book for the benefit of all humanity.
And I will babysit your children for the benefit of your marriage.
All right. How about you, dear listener?
Yeah. How can you huddle up? Are there people that you can think of in your life that you want to huddle with? That is, team up, arms around each other with a greater goal, a greater sense of purpose. Has this conversation opened your mind, shifted your perspective at all? We'd love to hear from you.
Okay, so, you know, we've said this before. We will say it again. All you got to do is go to Apple Podcasts, rate and review Metaphysical Milkshake, ask your life's big question. And if it's good enough, if it's something we're interested in, we're going to invite you to come on the show, ask us that question in person. We will answer it, solve your problems, make your life that much easier and more productive. So we have someone here who had a very, very interesting question. This is Rain and I. We love this question. If you want to get on the show, figure out some way to ask some version of this question, and we will very likely bring you on. This is Derek Russell from California. Hi, Derek.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Derek, what's happening? What's on your mind?
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you guys about AI, you know. It's the cutting-edge technology these days, and my main question was, you know, with AI, there's kind of like this debate. Are we in the robot revolution? Has the robot revolution already happened? Will it happen? But also tying into that, I want to ask about AI and kind of like, let's just say the morality of it all, you know, like thinking like we're on the cutting edge with like self-driving cars, self-driving trains. Like, and if we get to this point where we can fully automate that, morally, should we not have any humans involved? You know, a plane flying a ton of passengers, no humans, you know, I got a lot on my mind, guys, you know.
There's so many ways to approach the AI question. I mean, there's so many ways into this issue. You know, two of them pop into my mind. One is that as AI increases, we're going to see a big change in kind of the employment landscape. So if it's self-driving trucks, how many tens of millions of truck drivers are out of work? You know, if it's AI picking vegetables, how many farm workers are out of work? So, you know, this can go on and on. And are we equipped as a society to deal with this kind of new wave of unemployment? I mean, we've already seen it's been a slow shift from the assembly line being mostly people to being mostly machine, but that took decades. But the upcoming changes could be very, very swift. So there is a morality question around that. Like, what do we owe as a society to our workforce? And do we have another way to, you know, to fit these workers, to plug them into some other kind of profession or educate them or relocate them? The other morality question around this is, you know, if we create an AI that has its own consciousness, I'm really fascinated by the problem of consciousness, what they call the hard problem of consciousness. Because for the kind of secular atheist materialist way of looking at things, the fact that we have consciousness doesn't make any sense. The fact that we have emotions and feelings and that we witness our lives as kind of an ever unfolding movie in front of our eyes, that there's a beginning, middle, and end, that we have a self-identity, that we have personality traits, that, you know, we have, you know, memories and we can write an opera and all of this kind of stuff, does not actually lead to the survival of the species. Why do we have that? And why do we have it and octopuses don't, as far as we know? But if we're going to create AI that has consciousness, ever increasing consciousness, there could be a point in the not too distant future, 50 years, 100 years, where we're creating an AI that has a similar kind of interactive consciousness driven mode of being in the world, of having a memory when it's created and having thoughts and feelings and perceptions and personality and putting things together. And, you know, just as we are. And then do we have the right to create that? And do we have the right to then end the life of something that is having that kind of experience? Now, I know that this is the subject of many a science fiction film, including Spielberg's AI. Nonetheless, I find it incredibly fascinating. So I don't have any answers, but it is a crazy new world out there.
That's so fascinating, Rain, because you're right. Like, the people who reject the whole mind-body dualism, who believe that whatever consciousness is, it's fundamentally, you know, the workings of the brain. So it's like it's an issue of matter. If that's true, and I'm not sure it is true, but if that's true, then why couldn't we recreate it in a machine, right? Do the right coding, you put the right things together, and there you go. The machine has consciousness. And I love your view is like, well, then what do we do with the machine? But the other moral question is, what about us then? Like, then are we're nothing? We're just machines. That's all we are, except, but just not as good because we're flesh and blood instead of metal. But the one thing, and I'm glad you brought up every movie, every AI movie. The one thing that always gets me is that I think those movies have prepped us to think of AI as like a robot. Like, an AI is this being, this bipedal being with a head and a mouth, and it looks just like us. Well, the AI revolution is already here, and the movies that always predict that AI will inevitably destroy humanity, that's already happening. It's called Facebook. I mean, right? Facebook is run by an artificial intelligence. So I'm not a scientist here, but the difference between a robot and an artificial intelligence is that a robot does the thing that you program, and an artificial intelligence learns on its own and essentially does its own program based on the desire that you give it. So a robot, you say, pick up that box and put it on the shelf. An AI, you say, clean the room. And then the AI learns how to clean the room the best way. And for those of you who are already familiar with this, I apologize for telling you something you know already, but Facebook has an AI, the purpose of which is to keep people on Facebook. That's the whole purpose. So they told the AI, keep people on Facebook. And the AI on its own discovered that the way you keep people on Facebook is how, Rain?
You make them outraged.
Yeah. Piss them off. If you piss them off, they will stay on Facebook.
And the news works in the same way because, you know, as Reza is always reminding me, you know, the news is entertainment.
So we have genocides, you know, race riots, anti-vax, you know, information, like a pandemic out of control because of an AI. So this like futuristic world where we eventually develop an artificial intelligence that ends up killing us, we've been living in that world for a decade already. It's called Facebook.
But I do like that way of thinking, Reza, that we need to stop thinking of AI as an entity, right, as a bipedal, like, yes, hello, I am a robot, and get out of that completely and see it more as an algorithm. You know, it's much closer to Skynet than it is to like a cute little robot from a Spielberg movie. But Derek, what are your thoughts? What are you thinking? Has this jarred loose any of your thoughts on the AI revolution?
It makes me think that maybe robots and AI don't need a face. We think of it kind of like behind the scenes, and like maybe that's for maybe that's intentional. You know, they don't, a lot of times, you know, there's one aspect of AI where people trying to make it seem more human. Like you go on a call center and you go through and it's trying to answer those questions for you. It's trying to be human-like. But also there's this sort of aspect where, yeah, a lot of times these machines and systems that we use are controlled by AI. You know, think about it. Like I was talking about, I came in kind of concerned about, let's say, if robots replace pilots. But when you book a flight, it's not like one person just did the math right there. It's a whole system that's built out. So we're already kind of relying on these systems that are not human. So,
Derek, thanks so much for writing in to Metaphysical Milkshake. Folks listening, as we've repeated before, just go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a nice review, and talk about your metaphysical question. And we may bring you on the show. We would love to bring fans and listeners and random human beings and random AI intelligences that may be listening out there. We'd love to have you on Metaphysical Milkshake.
Yeah, find us on socials at Reza Aslan and at Rain Wilson. You can find us on Instagram at Metaphysical Milkshake or on Twitter at MetaMilk Podcast. Let us know your life's big question. We just might explore them on a future episode.
And remember to follow, rate, and review Metaphysical Milkshake on Apple Podcasts and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
And of course, you can also subscribe to Metaphysical Milkshake's YouTube channel. Watch our full episodes every week. Thank you, Brooke Baldwin, for diving deep.
Thanks for watching.
See you next time.
Metaphysical Milkshake is executive produced by Rain Wilson, Reza Aslan, and Colin Thompson. It is produced by Safa Samazadeh Yazd, Harris Lane, Mick DeMaria, Hashem Self, and DJ Lubel. Cast Media is the production and distribution partner. It is edited by Tyler Newbold and audio mixed by Justin Kyle. Original music by Jeff Tang.
Okay, serious question. Would I have gotten fired if CNN were run by women?
It's a very serious question.
No comment, Reza. No comment.
For those tuning in, Reza had a hit show on CNN, one of their biggest hit shows following Anthony Bourdain, Believer, in which he investigated different religions. And he said he tweeted Donald Trump is a piece of shit.
Fact check, true.
He got shit canned immediately.
Do you stand by your tweet?
Hell yes, I stand by my tweet.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.